Welcome to the Organize 365 podcast. I'm your host, professional organizer, productivity expert, and motivational speaker, Lisa Woodruff. This podcast will help you embrace progress over perfection and create lasting functional organizing in your home. I have so much to share with you, so let's get started. If you have followed me in Organize 365 for more than a hot second, you know that my favorite productivity author is Laura Vanderkam. I am so excited to have Laura on the podcast today and talking all about the new Corner Office, her ebook and audiobook that is out right now for those of you that may still be working from home and looking for some better solutions to this now longer than you thought move in your office. Let us welcome Laura back to the podcast. Well, as many of you know, my absolute most favorite author is Laura Vanderkam, and she has come out with a new book called The New Corner Office, and she graciously agreed to come on the podcast. So, Laura, welcome back to the Organize 365 podcast.
Thank you so much for having me back.
Yeah, well, I literally love everything that you write. As a matter of fact, a lot of my audience now reads all of your books, and then we have conversations about what you say in your books. Like, we have a whole bunch of Laura Vanderkam fans out here.
Oh, that's so exciting. I'm thrilled.
Yeah, and I love that you came out with this book, The New Corner Office. I mean, you got that one done and out pretty quick, didn't you?
It was a quick turnaround book. When all of this started happening in March, I had a realization, and a couple of the organizations I work with had a realization that there was going to be a need for work from home content, that a lot of people were going to be in this situation. We didn't know how long, but that they would be looking for ideas on how to organize their workday, how to stay productive, stay energized as they worked in a new situation. And so first what happened is I launched a new podcast that was called The New Corner Office. It was a short daily tip on how to work from home. And then talking with my agent and my publisher, realized there'd probably be a market for a book on the topic too. And so I wrote it quickly. Fortunately, I've been writing about careers and working from home for a while, so I was able to pull some of that together and got a lot of great people to talk with me about their work from home routines. And, you know, wrote it, published it. And since it's available as an ebook and an audiobook, that shortens the timeline a lot, because if it doesn't have to be printed, it doesn't have to be shipped, there's just so much more possibility for getting out to the market quickly. And that's what we wanted to do.
Yeah. And I find with a lot of my other fellow business owners, when I talk about, you know, how COVID-19 has affected our businesses and just business in general, I came to the realization that whatever you had done before March of 2020, so up until February, the networking you had, the relationships you had, your work that you'd been honing, the 10,000 hours that you did and whatever you had been doing really has carried you through this first 6 months of COVID. It's really hard to, you know, change gears here after the pandemic has started. And so you already had a great agent, great relationships with publishers, already had multiple podcasts. And so, yeah, it made sense that you would be able to take those learnings, put them in a different format, and then put those out.
Well, it was also about pivoting though, too, in terms of my business model, because I've spent much of the past 3-4 years traveling around giving speeches at conferences, corporate events. And it became very, very clear in like the first 3 weeks of March that that business was not only, you know, disappearing for a little bit, it would be disappearing for a long time. And so part of this has also been pivoting my business to deal with a new environment. Who knows when anyone's going to want to go sit with 3,000 of their closest friends in a conference center again. I don't think it's really high on people's lists of a good time right now. Mm-hmm. So because of that, figuring out different ways to reach my market, to put things out into the world that people are interested in or willing to pay for. That's the business. So that's all been part of figuring this thing out.
Yeah. And I think too, when you talk about working from home, because you've talked about working from home before, you know, I've always worked from home, and you and I both have worked with our kids here, with nannies, with our kids and babysitters and things like that. It's adding in the spousal component as well. And like my kids are older, like, so they were off at college and now they're back home. So we have these other adults in the house at the same time. Right before we started recording this podcast, my husband had been back to work at his office, and then he went to Florida for vacation. And so he's quarantining at home for 2 weeks. And he just got the note from his boss that said, no need to come back. Now you're back at home again. I'm like, wait a minute. I need that office. What do you mean? Now, where am I going to go? And I think it's not just the how we work and when we work, but it's working around if now you're schooling kids from home or you, I mean, we have better internet. You can upgrade your internet, but how many computers do you have? And can you have a quiet place to record if you're recording something? And thinking about all those things, not just our productivity from home.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a multifaceted puzzle. And I also, you know, want to stress to people, there are many reasons to work from home, and a lot of people are not getting to experience all of those upsides mm-hmm. in this particular situation. As you said, you and I have done it with other people being in charge of our children during the day, for mm-hmm. instance, and a lot of people have not had that set up when they're suddenly working from home, and they're like, wait, I'm getting distracted all the time. I said, well, that's not inherent from working from home. That's inherent in having children that you are trying to take care of while you are also working. I mean, if you separate out those two things, you will be very productive at home. But right now you are probably not getting all of the productivity upsides if that is also a task that's in your lap.
Yeah. And I feel like some of the upsides, like not having to commute to the office and things like that, actually in this instance have somewhat been a detriment for me because I don't have any thinking time. Like I don't have any alone time. So creating like a walking commute or even, you know, I'll listen to a podcast with both AirPods in while I'm hair drying my hair for too long so that I can get through a full podcast so nobody interrupts me. Have you found any things like that that have really helped people in that transition or just getting thinking time?
Well, I do know that a lot of people did use their commutes as decompression time, for instance, in the afternoon, mm-hmm. as sort of getting themselves out of home mode and into worker mode in the morning, telling themselves like now it's time to be a worker. Now it's time to think in that space. And that was one of the things that was most disorienting for people who were suddenly having mm-hmm. to work from home in March. And I mean, the numbers are just huge. The Gallup did a poll and it was something like 30% roughly of Americans had ever worked from home as of mid-March. And then by April 1st, it was like 60%. I mean, it was literally double. So this is millions of people who have this sudden and complete change in how they work. And so, you know, I don't know when you first started working from home, it was disorienting. I know it was for me that I was like all of a sudden going from feeling like, okay, I've gone somewhere and therefore I have done something, as opposed to like, I'm just sitting at my kitchen table. Like I feel like I'm not doing anything at all. Even if I probably got the same amount done, it's just that physical separation creates a feeling that you have put in an honest day's labor. But you know, it's working from home is a skill. And as people have done more of it, they've started to see that. And you're seeing a lot of people put in various things to help with that. So going for a walk, like you said, in the morning, you know, as things get back to normal, you'll see people who are working from home long-term doing things like walking their children to school in the morning, or driving a spouse to the train station in the morning, you know, walking a dog in the morning, doing a quick errand, like going to the coffee shop down the street and getting a coffee and coming home, and then you're in work mode. There are all sorts of things you can put into your life to create some sort of separation between home and work. And, you know, we might think about that on the beginning of the day. I think it's more important, though, to do it at the end of the day. Yeah. That one's less automatic. A lot of people know, well, I got to start work at some point. So there's going to be some transition at some yeah. point between home and work. But the end of the day is much less apparent. And so that's a you know, bonus advanced skill for people to say, okay, this is my transition ritual to say the workday is done. I am allowed to relax. I'm allowed to spend time with my family. I'm allowed to do other things. Like I can watch TV, even if I can see my work laptop. And do it guilt-free because the day is now done. Whatever that's going to be. I don't know what it's going to be for people, but some sort of transition ritual on the other end of the day.
Yeah. What are some of the things you do to end your workday?
Well, it's honestly shutting my computer down. And mm-hmm. for years, I didn't actually do this.
Me too.
I mean, because, you know, it goes into sleep mode or whatever. It powers off on its own to save energy. So it's not like you have to turn it off or it fries, although it turns out it does eventually fry. I learned that. So now I'm a little bit better about trying to shut it down at night. And it's not getting shut down at 5. Like, that's not happening. But I do usually shut it down around 7:30, and then try not to turn it back on. And I have my phone. Like, I can still check email or whatever. But having that certain semblance of end of the day, like I'm not going back in my office at that point, is helpful for me. You know, other people want to do things like You pour yourself a glass of wine. I mean, it's happy hour. It's the end of the day. You know, go pick your kids up at daycare. Obviously that's a way to end the day or send a sitter home. Maybe it's going for a walk around the block. Maybe it's calling a colleague to say goodbye. Maybe it's writing in your journal, setting up your to-do list for tomorrow. Anything that puts yourself in the mindset of, okay, this is the end of the day, time to move on.
Yeah, I similar to you, I would let my computer go into sleep mode. And so then, jiggle the mouse and boom, you're right back at work again, just to check one email and 2 hours go by. So I do the same thing. I look at my calendar for tomorrow. I get out an index card. I write down everything I have for tomorrow. I try to clear out my email inbox one last time. And then I physically turn my computer off, walk downstairs, go out back and scroll Instagram. Like it's my time when I scroll Instagram, or more often than not, I get in my car and I drive and I get hot Culver's onion rings because that's nice. What I want. It's 45 minutes round trip to leave my house, go there, sit in the line, get the onion rings, come back. It's not great. I don't drink wine. So you could say it's the same thing as wine.
It's the same thing. It's your wine.
It is. It totally is. It's like, at 10:30 today, I was in a meeting with my team. I said, is Culver's open yet? Like, I need to know if Culver's is open yet. We were talking about all the integrations of all the different websites and the custom coded. And I was like,
I
need onion rings for this. I cannot have any more conversations. But yeah, just that going downstairs. But with, so I was different than you. I started my business as a stay-at-home mom and I just kept blogging on the side and kept growing until finally I'm still arguing, I'm allowed to work now. This is work time, people. I'm not available for all these household things. My morning routine, I've tried the walking in the morning. I've tried other things to do in the morning. I find that if I have a lot going on that day or if I want to listen to one more podcast before I get started, I actually do the dishes and pick up the house, which is not something I usually do. Like I got really disciplined at letting the house not be organized and cleaned. Otherwise, I would never start working as a stay-at-home mom. And now that I am a corporate CEO and I'm working, if I choose to, instead of starting at 8, I'll start at 9 and I will literally start the laundry, do the dishes, do all those household related tasks, listen to a couple more podcasts and then start my day at 9. So those are my morning and after work routines. And I do think that after work routine is just as important, if maybe not even more important than your bedtime routine, as far as your work health.
I agree. It's important to have a good rhythm to your day. I mean, it's a way that people can manage their energy. And so having a start, having an end, having breaks in the middle, matching the correct work to the correct time is also important for feeling like you've put in a good march for the day and then having enough energy to march again tomorrow.
Yeah, I love that. I was just going to ask you that about the rhythms. So being a stay-at-home mom who built my business this way, I learned that there were certain buckets of work that I had to get done, a certain amount of hours of work I had to get done, or certain projects that I had to get done. And then I fit those in around my parenting duties, my household duties, whatever, that the Terminex was coming today, or you know, whatever was going to interrupt my day. And I'd be like, okay, 2 hours of work, 1 hour of this, 2 hours of this, 1 hour of this. Do you find that people who work a traditional, 8 hour a week job are able to do that, make, 4 2-hour buckets of time with some breaks in there, 2 2-hours a night? What have you seen works and doesn't work?
Well, I think a lot of people with full-time jobs don't do that because they don't perceive their time as being limited in the way that somebody who's trying to simultaneously manage a household might do. But I would say it probably would have behooved a lot of people to think in terms of that because, honestly, we can't ever concentrate for 8 hours. The day is automatically going to be divided up into chunks of time where we tackle different tasks. And if you do this consciously, like you say, okay, I've got probably an hour and a half of good focus time in the morning before I need to get a cup of coffee. And then I got another hour and a half before I'm going to take lunch and then 30 minutes. And then, maybe an hour before I need to do something. And then another hour and a half after that. I mean, it's less time than, 8 hours that seems endless at the beginning of it. But if you could think then, well, what tasks do I have that require focus and take, say, 60 minutes to 90 minutes, then put one in each of those buckets, you would make a lot of progress. I mean, you'd get a lot done. And so it's a good mindset to have, even if it doesn't feel like your time is limited in the way that somebody who is trying to, manage a household at the same time might do.
Yeah, I know one of the things that I did in April when our whole team had gone home, some of them used to work in the warehouse and everybody was working from home in April, and getting toiletries was a huge issue. Like it was like going out and foraging for your food to get toilet paper and some other things. And I had realized something that I've always known is stores are always less crowded in the morning. They're always better stocked. You can get in and out so much faster. And so I just said, Thursday morning is shopping morning. Like, get up, get ready, go to the store, come back, start your day like an hour and a half, 2 hours later, and then make up that time somewhere else. Or actually what I did at my team is they didn't have to make up that time in the month of April, which gave them the permission to go to the stores when they were better stocked and they weren't as crowded. I think that as we go into the fall now and we're thinking about these different household responsibilities, if you could take 2 hours from your Thursday and work on a Saturday afternoon or a Sunday night, if you're allowed to do that, and take that time and do all your errands on a Tuesday or Thursday morning, you're going to get them done faster, easier, better stocked, not take away from that family time. There are lots of ways that you can look at the different things that you are doing and put them in different places. That's why I recommend your book, 168 Hours, You Have More Time Than You Think, all the time, because that book really taught me to kind of bucket your time, kind of like time envelopes, like you would do money envelopes for Dave Ramsey, and looking at your time that way. And ever since that book, I cannot look at my time any differently than that. I see all of the hours that are available to me and I move them around to what is the most productive and better use for our family at that time.
Well, that's great. I'm glad to hear that you're doing that. There's 168 hours in a week, and there is no natural reason that some hours have to be devoted to something versus other things. Now, there are certain things with how much energy we have, when people are better able to do stuff. I mean, you could go to a 24-hour grocery store at 1 a.m. Like, you could. Most people are not going to do that. So if that's the case, but you can still be a little bit flexible about when things happen. And certainly one of the upsides of more people working from home is they are discovering some degree of this flexibility. And yes, a lot of organizations that are, you know, more traditional probably are still roughly having people work 9 to 5, just because it's what people are used to. And there are some upsides to that. But you can start to experiment. I mean, as we get into this long term, as you said, you take 2 hours on a Thursday morning and go shopping and just sign in at 10 a.m. instead of 8 a.m. And, you know, probably the world will not end in that 2 hours. I mean, any more than it already is, right? And then you've got your shopping done. Or you might decide to go for a run in the middle of the day. I mean, why not? If you don't have any more video calls after the end of it, like, you know, no one can smell you in your home office. So you may as well, you know, get a little bit of exercise.
And even with a mask out of our home office, Laura, like, we just smell our own breath now. I'm like, whoa.
It's an added benefit. Like, people's noses are covered. Things are just much less obnoxious than they used to be that day. So, yeah.
Totally.
Yeah, you can move time around. Moving time around and being flexible about when things happen. It's an upside of working from home, of working more flexibly. And you know, as I think more people are seeing this, there are some definite upsides. Now, of course, there are downsides that some people have a really hard time setting boundaries, and it can be very easy to work all night, work all weekend. Not that nights or weekends are sacred, but if you never have any time off, then you might wind up with a bit of a problem.
Yeah, and we saw that in Organize 365, like the month of April as well, which is why I was like, get out and go to the grocery stores, because we were literally stuck in our houses. We couldn't get out. You know, we were in lockdown, and so we couldn't go anywhere. And so because you couldn't go anywhere, well, I guess I'll just keep working. Like, even my husband, who is for 30 years, 9 to 5, like, this is the job he does. He actually works 8 to 4:30. He has this job every single day. He'd get to 4:30 and be like, well, there's nothing to do. Like, there's no sports. We're not allowed. So do I keep working? Like, even he was considering to continue on in the working, and no one in Organize 365 took any vacation time for 3 months. I was like, okay, you guys have to take your vacation time, because you're not all going to take it in December. So we need to start taking a day off and do something. So I almost think that we figured out we got to get the work done. How do we, now that we work from home and this is going to continue on, and who knows what's going to happen with school and all these other things, how do we feel like we have permission to do things that are not work in the evenings and on the weekends, especially when the things that we used to do aren't things we can do now?
Yeah, although this is starting to change. I mean, there are definitely places that are opening back up and that people are coming up with ways to do things that fit within social distancing guidelines. I tell people to, if you want to not work as much, and you work from home where it's harder to set boundaries, you need to come up with other things to do in your life that consume time and that you want to do so that work doesn't automatically get that time. So when I first began working from home a great, great many years ago, and I had the same issue, I'd half work, I'll half surf the web all night. I wound up joining three community choirs. And what that meant is that three evenings a week, I had to stop work around 6 o'clock because I'd have to eat and get ready to go to rehearsal. And it really made me much more efficient. Like there was a time that I had to end because I had to go do something. And people were expecting me to be there. Like I, you know, couldn't just not show up. I mean, that's not nice to the rest of the choir if you continually miss the rehearsals. So, you know, that was what I did. Now, obviously choirs are probably the thing that will come back last based yeah. on, you know, what we know about spreading the coronavirus. But there are other things. I mean, you could have, you know, there's a lot of recreational sports that are starting back up again. So, you know, playing in a soccer league at night or maybe some sort of volunteer work or meeting friends for a walk or, you know, going to work in your garden or having a set call with a relative at 6:30 at night just to check in. But something that fills the time outside of work that you want to do and that makes that time seem more important and seems like more of a commitment because you will honor a commitment. You won't honor just a general idea that, oh, I should stop working at some point.
Yeah. And as I mean, even the things that you started mentioning, and this is going to be played a month after we recorded, recording this on August 11th, I'm like, oh, I just think by the time we get to September, we already know the Big Ten has been canceled and there probably are not going to be a lot of new fall seasons of shows because they couldn't be recorded over the summer and there won't be as many movies coming out. Like, I think as we go through the coronavirus pandemic, until we get to March of 2020, we are going to continue to run across different seasons and different months of things we used to do in these times that we still are not able to do. And my dad always said, until you get through a year in business, you really don't know what that business is like. I think it's true for our home life as well. Until you get through a year of working through home, especially with this pandemic, we don't realize how it's going to affect us because, like, I just had my book launch and we can't do book signings and you couldn't do them for yours either. And so as we are looking forward to some of these things that we used to do outside of our house that we're not allowed to do, it's getting harder and harder to do that free time. And so I'm trying to think, especially for my audience who has their home organized and they have more productivity, so it's not like working on home projects would be what they do. I'm thinking for myself, other than working more, which is what I usually do, what are some of the things that I've put off in the past or would be conducive to doing during a pandemic? And I think things like getting caught up on my scrapbooks, actually writing a book if that's something you've always wanted to do, training for a marathon, any of these things that are more personal goals and setting aside the time and blocking that out, like, okay, I'm going to do 2 hours a night for something that is just to develop me as a person or something I've had on my bucket list that is not other person dependent, is going to be something you're more in control of and can actually start to plan out and look forward to and buy the supplies and put that on your calendar. What do you think about that?
Well, I definitely think it's a great idea. On the other hand, I wrote an op-ed early in the pandemic for the Washington Post that was called, "You Have Time to Write That Novel, You Just Don't Want to."
Right.
And so, I mean, there is an element here of, many times we have told ourselves we are not doing things in life because we don't have time.
Right.
And for a certain proportion of people, this pandemic has opened up time. Not everybody. Now, if you've got, you know, two toddlers underfoot and you're trying to work a full-time job and everything, like, you know, yes, I'm not saying you. I'm not saying those person. But other people whose, you know, families are older, you know, who had time that was spent commuting or going to sports, activities, whatever, and that's no longer the thing that's going on, there is more time that's opened up. And, you know, there's still many things we don't do. Anyways, a lot of people have not written that novel because it turns out that it may not have always been about the time. Time is a convenient excuse for things that aren't actually huge priorities for us, but we feel like we should say they are. So if it's a priority for you, great, make the time. Do just what you said. Say, I'm gonna, you know, spend an hour on this on a certain number of days per week at a time when I have my energy. If it's not after work, it might be before work. Maybe you start work a little bit later. Like you said, this will be your Tuesday morning in the grocery store or whatever. Yeah. But put that time in somewhere and hold yourself accountable for it. But if you just are really having a hard time making this happen, allow yourself to entertain the idea that you don't actually want to do it. And that is okay. That is 100% fine. You don't have to do anything. And if it's not going to bring you great joy, then forget it. Find something else that you do enjoy.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I'm glad you said that, because I think that we do think when we're home, we're going to be able to do this. I'll never forget the sign, the woman standing in a New York apartment with this big sign that says, "I don't care how long you make me stay at home, I am not going to clean out my closet." And I was like, well, because if you don't want to do it, you're not going to do it. And just because you finally have the time doesn't mean you have to spend it that way. You're allowed to spend your time however you want to spend your time. And it was really hard for me to realize, and I think a lot of my audience too, that once you identify that you have these 168 hours, it is okay to spend 40 of them, you know, doing puzzles, taking baths, self-care, reading books. Like, it's okay to spend it however you want to spend your time. Just because you have it doesn't mean it all has to be productive.
Oh yeah, definitely. And you know, I know that there's been a lot of screen time for everyone over the past few months, and sure, there are other things to do. And I generally suggest that people try to put a couple minutes at least into what I call effortful fun before they start on the effortless fun. So maybe try to read a book for 10 minutes before you start doom scrolling through Twitter or whatever. But I mean, you know, it's okay. Like, we can recognize that things are not ideal right now, and people may have a low level of motivation at the moment for various things, mm-hmm. without believing that it's going to be like that forever. Now, it may be like this for a long time. I'm not saying that, you know, we should plan on tomorrow being better, but, you know, things do eventually end. And if you feel like we're in a bit of a low moment now, then probably there will be some higher moments in the future. So, you know, think about it. You can challenge yourself to think about what you'd like to do when you do have more energy. Yeah. And put it that way, because you might be willing to think about these things, even if you're not actually willing to execute on them right now. And as you think about them, maybe you'll see something that's not the big thing. Maybe it's not writing a novel, but it's doing something much smaller. Like, you know, maybe it's writing 3 sentences in a journal a day. Okay, well, that's fine. Maybe that's something you're willing to try. And so, you know, make a list of the things you might be interested in doing, and then choose one that seems manageable that you don't feel so much resistance to.
Yeah. And I love that you said the energy, because you and I are very productive people, positive. We produce a lot of stuff. And even I feel the energy is like, it's getting a little harder. Like, everything's getting just a little bit harder. And for people who are already prone to anxiety and depression, it's really hard. Like, they are like, okay, this is a lot harder than we thought it would be. And there are two things you've spoken about in the past that I would love for you to share. One is you had that running streak. Like, you're pretty good at working out. I'm not. So how did you come up with starting to wanting to run, running, doing the running streak? Like, for people who are thinking about, well, maybe I will start walking or running. I know a lot of my friends have started that during the pandemic. Can you talk about how you started that, or why you did that for a long period of time?
Yeah. So, I mean, I've long been fascinated by streaks. Partly my father has been reading Hebrew every day since 1978. So I, you know, you might say, or 77, I think. So I was born into a streak that was going on. And so I know that people do this, and I've sort of had my eye out over the years for people who have various long running streaks, and not just running streaks, but streaks of any sort. And I was already running, you know, 5 days a week or so. And I thought, well, let me try running every day. And I realized that it generally wasn't that hard. I mean, if my goal was I had to run a mile, then all I really had to do was add 2 more miles to my week. Because if I was already running 5 days, then the other 2 days, you know, it was just complicated to put it in somewhere. But it wasn't that bad. You know, 10 minutes, you can do it. And, you know, I got through some early hurdles that might have derailed me. And I realized, like, actually, I have enough control of my schedule that I can do this and I can keep going. And, you know, generally, it didn't require me to do too much that was crazy. There were a few days that were challenging, but, you know, it was doable. The people in my life knew I was doing it and laughed a little, but were, you know, generally okay and supportive about it. So yeah, I went for, I think it wound up being 1,100 days. And it was a good streak. So
I know that you stopped right before you had your latest baby.
It was the day I had the baby. Okay, well. That's what stopped it.
And then was it after your second youngest son? Was that when you started after he was born? Or
so, yeah, it started okay. after.
So in between these two babies.
So it was in between baby number 4 and baby number 5. Yeah.
Okay.
That's how it went.
Well, I remember watching you, and I was like, oh, she's still running. She's still running. She's still running. And I listened to your podcast. with Sarah Hartunger, where you were talking about the streak and you guys were kind of talking about, well, how long will I do the streak up till the baby is born, or will I stop before? And you're like, yeah, I'm going to keep going. Like, I love how in the podcast that you and Sarah talk a lot about your different habits and goals and just all facets of your life that you're growing and developing. And we can kind of follow along with how you set those kind of goals. It's really fun to watch the two of you. You're very goal-oriented.
I guess. I've been feeling less goal-oriented right now. I think it's just because so many of the goals of 2020 had to change.
Yeah.
I mean, among the things, so I'm not doing the running streak anymore. I decided not to do that. It just wasn't of interest to me anymore. Like, I now know that, yes, I can run 1,100 days straight. I can run through every day of a pregnancy. I can run while traveling around the world. Like, it's okay. I can't. I know I've proven to myself I can do that. Yeah. Not interested anymore. But I was going to try to run a marathon. I ran one like 11 years ago and it was fine. So I thought I'd run one in this fall, but now it's canceled. So I don't feel any desire to run 26 miles for fun, I guess, just to do it. So I probably won't. Like, I'll do, you know, some longer run, but yeah.
I love how introspective you are and analytical you are just of yourself and your time and your habits. And the other thing that you've mentioned in your books, which just fascinates me, and I tried to figure it out on my own, but I'm apparently not as diligent as you are, is that you have figured out that your ideal amount of sleep is 7.4 hours a night. How in the world? I'm still trying to figure out how you figured that out and how you know.
Well, I don't know if it's ideal. I know what what my body aims for, because I track my time, and I have tracked my time on these spreadsheets that have 336 blocks, which represent 30-minute cells for the 168-hour week. And so I have done this since April of 2015.
Another streak.
It's a long streak. And so, you know, when I was first doing it, I'd analyze the numbers relatively frequently. I'd be like, okay, well, let me, you know, add up the first month. Let me add up the second month. Let me add up the first 6 months. And then, oh, I'll add up the next 6 months. And I noticed that over any longer period of time, like over any sort of 2 month period of time, it always came out to about 7.3, 7.4 hours. And it was uncanny because the weeks were not all the same. Like, some weeks, for whatever reason, I got a lot of sleep. It'd be, you know, 56, 57 hours. I guess that's a lot for me. And then other weeks, it would be more like, you know, closer to 44, 45, like a short week. So it wasn't that I was getting the same amount every night, but it always equaled out to 7.3, 7.4 over a longer period of time. And so, you know, I tracked year one and it was 7.4. I tracked year two and it was 7.4. I tracked year three, it was 7.3. But between, you know, that's just how it rounded. It was between 7.3 and 7.4. So, I mean, that tells me something. That tells me that my body is aiming toward it, that over a period of over 1,000 days, and chunked into three, you know, you could have done any chunks, any number of chunks, it would have come out to that average. And that's heartening to me right now because I'm not sleeping very well because my baby is not doing very well in the sleep department. But I see what I do is, you know, I try to start the night early, like going down earlier. I try to catch up on sleep maybe in the later morning if I can, or taking a nap, or some, you know, morning sleeping in if that's possible. And it still comes out, like some nights it's less, of course, and some weeks it's less, but I am able to get sort of to that point. And partly it's that, you know, I don't feel very functional if I don't get to that point. And so my body is forcing me to catch up. Whereas if I have gotten it for several nights, then, you know, I'm not going to get more. It's, you know, I will pop up. If I've fallen asleep at 10 o'clock at night, I would just pop up on my own at 5:30 in the morning if I was well rested. And I've seen that over the years too. So, you know, it's just self-analysis, I guess.
Yeah, it's so interesting because with the pandemic, Greg and I both noticed that we would each have one night where we would only sleep 5 hours and we would wake up and we'd be like up at 3 o'clock for like the rest of the day. And then the rest of the nights we wouldn't. And I think a lot of us with the pandemic, our sleep has been disrupted for various reasons. And so I've been trying a lot of things over the last 6 months. I'm not ready to report back to all of them, but I have like two sound machines going. We switched our mattress. I go to bed at a different time. I start walking in the morning. Like, I'm trying all the things. It could also be my age. I'm 48, you know, and sometimes some of those things are related to your sleep as well. But I've been tracking I don't do journaling and I don't track my time, but I have at the end of the day when I'm checking out, go back and fill in my calendar for how long everything actually took. And I'm putting my personal things in on a personal calendar so I could see how I'm using my time over time. And there have been months where I track my sleep in there, but if it's broken sleep or I wake up, it's not working as well. But I would really love to know, like, I just want to know the number. If it's like 8 hours, fine. It's 8 hours, fine. Then I'll just plot it on my calendar. We need 8 hours. If I got six here, it's going to be 10 here. Or I need a nap or whatever. I think it's helpful to know what your body needs.
Oh, yeah. No, I found it very helpful. And, you know, I know that if I don't get it for a couple nights, like, I probably will get to it. Like, this will not continue forever because my body won't let me continue forever. Mm-hmm. And that's been, you know, useful to see.
Yeah, I agree. So the chapters in your new book are to manage your tasks, not the time. We didn't really talk about that, but we did talk about getting our rhythm right. And then chapter three is building your team. Let's end on that one after these. And then thinking big, we talked kind of about bigger dreams that you would be doing. And the last one was optimizing your well-being. Let's go back and let's talk about building your team. You've been really, really good. I love your book. I Know How She Does It. Oh my gosh, such a great book. Thank about you. How women like me who grow a business from home, they don't do it by themselves. They definitely have people that are helping them clean or with children or with that, whatever. You can't do it all, but you can get it all done. And you can lower your expectations. Like, and I'm always saying in the Organized 365 podcast, I do my dishes 2, maybe 3 times a week. The dishes are never done in the kitchen. I have young adult children. They're never going to be done in the kitchen anyway. So why would I try to do them 3 times a day? Like, that is just, forget it. It's not worth it to me. I'd rather read a book or do a jigsaw puzzle. So when people are working from home and they're not used to having a team, I often say to my husband, you know, you guys have a cleaning staff that comes in and cleans. When you go to the printer, there's already paper there because somebody's job is to stock that. When you go in the office, there's a water cooler, there's a coffee pot, there's all those things that somebody else is stocking for you that you don't realize. And then when you're at home, you're like, oh, there were other people that did some of these things. So what would you say to people who are now working at home and they're trying to figure out how to do it all? Who are the important people to have on our team and what kind of grace can we give ourselves?
Well, if you have young children, person number one is somebody to watch those children while you're working. And I get this question all the time. People feel it, they're like, how did you write a book with 5 children at home? Right. I'm like, well, because I have childcare. Like, I'm not watching. They're not in my care while I'm working because I'm working. Like, if I went to an office, I wouldn't be also trying to watch them. They wouldn't be sitting under my desk in my cubicle. Like, it's not like they are in my home office either. You know, there's that. So make sure it's enough. That you feel like you can do your job. One of the things I wrote about, and I Know How She Does It, is that temptation when you do work from home to try to get by with less. And I saw all sorts of convoluted schedules over the years. Yep. People who wanted to like never have to pay for an hour of nap time coverage, for instance, which I get. On the other hand, it's like, okay, yeah, but you're going to have your biggest client call you at 1:30 and it's like, wait a minute, the baby's supposed to be sleeping and he's not. Now what are you going to do, right? Like, you need to be able to do your job. So that is person number one. If you are the sort of person who is bothered by a mess in your house, then probably it would behoove you to have somebody taking care of that, because otherwise you will be in your home office, you'll be in your house seeing it all the time, and it will keep you from getting other stuff done, because it feels productive, right? It's not like, you know, I'm not watching Netflix. Like, I'm, you know, I'm not putting off work by watching Netflix. This is productive. The dishes need to get done. Well, do they really? Like, no, I would say in the grand scheme of things, probably, you know, calling that client is more important for you than getting those dishes done right now. And if you're doing the dishes because you're putting off that call with the client, then you've got a bit of a problem there. So that, you know, the standard stuff of, you know, housework, yard work, you know, but you could also build a team professionally too. And I think that this is important for a lot of people who are more in the small business space to recognize. It's really hard to, you know, put money into hiring people because that's overhead, I guess. But it's how your business grows. I mean, because there is only one you, and there are only so many hours in the day. And you cannot work for all of them. And so if your business is just you, there is an automatic limit on how much you can grow. And you know, that's fine. Like, you know, the CEO of Coca-Cola doesn't consider it to be a failure because they're hiring people. Like, it's just how you get bigger. And it's the same thing with a small business. So, you know, consider what tasks are taking your time and don't feel like the best use of your time. And then see if there's a way that you can find somebody else to take some of those off your plate, so you can focus your time on other things.
Yeah. And some of the things that I've seen work in the last couple months, Abby is a nanny, my daughter is a nanny, and she never stopped babysitting. Like, even when we were in the quarantine stay at home, because the people she babysit for are in the healthcare industry. And so she still went and she babysat because it was considered essential. I also know other family members who have had older nieces and nephews or cousins come and live with them. And so they're actually living in the house with them, and then they're helping for schooling from home if you end up in a schooling from home situation. But I hope we don't end up in a lockdown situation again. But if we do have more of the kids are going to be schooling from home and you also have a 40-hour a week work job, you may not have the discretionary income in your budget in order to hire childcare, but could you hire a mother's helper 2 hours a day or 2 or 3 days a week for 4 hours a day? And so get a smaller budget for someone who knows that you're going to be home, but then you have those solid work hours. Like, I don't care if you're locking yourself in your bedroom, I'm like, great, they're here. And so you're doing the schoolwork in the morning with the kids plus your job. But when you get to 1 o'clock from 1 to 5, 3 days a week, you have this mother's helper coming. So you're only hiring childcare for 12 hours a week. And it's going to be the art part of school, or maybe this mother's helper is great with spelling tests or something like that, and they're going to do that part of the schooling from home, and you are just going to plow through the email and do your deep work uninterrupted. Just giving yourself some pockets of time where you are not on call and your attention is not divided will be hugely beneficial.
Oh yeah. I mean, I've been telling people, like, if you have 4 hours, you will get more done at work and feel better with your family. If you split it 2 hours and 2 hours, like, you get full coverage for 2 hours and be fully focused at work, and then, you know, have the 2 hours with your kids versus trying to do four where you're going back and forth. The other thing I would say, and a lot of couples are doing, is splitting it between the two of them. If there are two of you and there are not funds for childcare, although I question, the people say that as an automatic thing, and I think it's because they assume women are supposed to be doing it for free. But anyway, let's just go ahead and say that the funds are not there. Then you can actually work it out so each of you gets about 25 to 30 focused hours by alternating times, shifts of the schedule. And that will allow you to get a lot done. I mean, you know, it's not 40 hours, but if you plan your 25 to 30 hours really, really well, you'll get through most of the stuff. And then you can do some of the random email checks at night or on the weekend or whatever, and not trying to do it during that time where you have away from your kids.
Yeah, and just know how you work best. I mean, I've told the story many times when the kids were younger. I had a nanny 10 hours on Wednesdays only. So from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m., I would work on everything in the basement. And then the other 6 days of the week, I worked with my kids, you know, underfoot. But one day a week, like, I was able to get more done in those 10 hours than I would have if I had had 2 hours every day for 5 days a week. So just understand what kind of a worker you are. Laura, this has been so much fun. I love how you end when you talk about how, let's set up this office like it's our office, like, buy good pens. You were like, buy good pens.
Buy good pens.
And I'm like, amen. Like, you're working from home. Like, when Greg worked from home, day number two, he realized he needed a printer, and he had the company buy him a printer because he prints everything out, and now it's right next to his desk. Like, what would you have had at the office that you don't have now? Do you need a scanner? Do you need a printer? Do you need better Wi-Fi? Do you need legal pads? Do you need, I don't know, a coffee mug? Get what you need to have it be your office, even if it's just on this one desk, or if you are working on half of your dining room table, set it up like an office. Get good pens.
Yeah, I mean, working should be, it should feel good to work. Like, you don't want it to be constantly feeling like you're making do. And this is not going to help with the broader cause of productivity. And I mean, we, you know, I tell people that all the time. I have a hard time convincing myself, but we did just start buying extra devices so I don't have to give up my laptop for kids doing their schooling. That was a bad situation in the spring. I'm like, wait, I don't have my laptop and my phone for like an hour in the middle of the day, and that's not going to work long term. So, you know, we have more devices, all good. You know, I think that will definitely help with the situation this year.
Yeah, and I think you're also thinking about maybe you wouldn't have spent your money this way in the past, but you also would have gone to Florida. So there are different ways that we're spending our money than we would have before. So just look at what the rest of this year is going to be, or this school year is going to look like for you and your family, and then invest the time, money, and emotional resources you have in the best way possible to get through this next season of the pandemic, which hopefully is going to be over soon.
Let's hope, Laura? Yes, exactly.
Thank you so much for being on the podcast. It has been a pleasure having you again. Can you tell everyone how they can get your new book and where they can find you?
Yes. So please come visit my website, which is lauravanderkam.com. And you can read all about my various podcasts and books there. And you can find the New Corner Office as an ebook or an audiobook from any of the retailers that sell that. So Amazon, barnesandnoble.com, etc.
Yeah. And so these are podcast listeners. Do you want to tell them about the different podcasts that you have?
Yeah. So I have one that's called Best of Both Worlds that I co-host with Sarah Hart Unger. And we talk about the intersection of work and family that releases one episode every week on Tuesdays. And then I have two short every weekday morning podcasts. One is called Before Breakfast, and it is a little tip to just take your day from great to awesome. And the New Corner Office is a tip on how to work from home effectively. So Monday through Friday, just 4 or 5 minutes. You can listen to it while you're making your coffee. And if you're looking for a fake commute to start your day, maybe it's listening to the podcast and we'll get you going.
Yeah, it's definitely better than turning on the news. That's all
I have to say. Yes, I promise to be better than the news.
Yes, yes. And I think I just want to leave everybody with, there is no like one cookbook way of getting this to work for you. And you have a lot of options working from home. So explore those options, like find what works best for you. Try things out for a couple weeks. If that doesn't work, go back to the book, try something different out, and just figure out what works for you and your family. And it may change as you go through different seasons as well.
Exactly. You can just try things out.
Are you looking for some novelty in your organization? Novelty? What do you mean, Lisa? I mean, something new and interesting that you haven't done before that will get you motivated and inspired and at least curious about getting your home organized. Well, I have just the thing for you. Organize 365 has just come out with a brand new free app. Yes, I said free app. If you go to your app store for your Android or your iOS device, you'll be able to download the Organize 365 app. Inside of the app, you can learn more about the Sunday Basket. You could try a week of the 100-day program free. And if you decide to dive deeper into either of those systems, the dashboard from the computer will be unlocked within your app as well. The app is due to be inside of the App Store around September 7th. So start looking for it then. Download the app and add some novelty into your organizing.